This show is a proud member of
the TechPodcast.com network.
Find out more about this and other shows at
www.techpodcast.com.
TechPodcast.com.
If it's tech,
it's here.
Source Trunk, your trunkload of open source.
Hi, and welcome to Source Trunk episode 12, recorded on the 26th of December 2006. This will be the last one of the year 2006. This podcast will try to show the listeners the more practical examples of open source and free software. I will do this by taking a random open source project and give it a little review. I'll be drinking a Verboden Vrucht with this episode. Verboden Vrucht translated means forbidden fruit, so that is promising. It's a Hoegaarden beer, that's from the village of Hoegaarden in Belgium. It's a pretty heavy beer, 8.8 degrees, very aromatic. It has a nice fruity flavor, but not too sweet. It's sweet and dry at the same time. It's dark when you look at the glass, and it's a beer that when you smell it, it really gives away the herbs that are used in it. You really can smell them, and it also enjoys, just as the other beers we describe, the second fermentation in the bottle. I like it a lot, and I already enjoyed one while I was cooking, so let's taste this one again. Tastes even better than before. Let's go.
System tools.
GNU DD Rescue. It's a data recovery tool. So it copies data from one file or block device, that can be a hard disk, a CD-ROM, anything, to another. And it tries hard to rescue the data in case of read errors. I'll give you an example. The hard drive of my server crashed. Now, all my data drives in my little home server are redundant. I sync them with rsync. Check out the episode about rsync if you don't remember what it exactly does. But my system hard drive is not copied or backed up in any way. So I was stupid enough to put some data on the system drive. Not too important, but important enough that I hate myself for putting it on the system drive. So I lost it completely. A lot of hardware errors on the drive, read errors. I tried to use the dd command to copy the whole drive to another drive, and it aborted after a while because of the read errors. Now, there's not much use in trying to use FSCK on it. This drive was completely toast. There was only one thing to do: get a new drive and install a new server. So I've built a new server. It's a Deep Debian Edge instead of a FreeBSD, just for kicks. And I wanted to spot the difference between the FreeBSD and Linux servers. And the hard drive that crashed was lying in the garage. And then I read about DD Rescue. I tried it out. I've put my crashed drive as a spare drive on my server. I've put in an extra drive in there, so I could use that to put the data of the failed one on it. And I installed DD Rescue via the Debian repository. I launched DD Rescue on it by issuing the following simple command: DD Rescue space source space target. And the source being /dev/hgc, and the target being /dev/hdd. Which is the fourth drive in my system. And then it began, completely automatic. I could follow the progress. It was telling me how much kilobytes were rescued, what the current rate of rescuing was, and so on and so on. And every time it failed on a track, it would try again and try again and try again until it finally gave up and just continued with the other sector. While it was doing that, it was giving the little sentence, copying data. Now, you've got to love the words copying data when you are trying to rescue important files of a failing drive. After that was done, it was enough to try to repair the file system on a drive via FSCK, and it recovered most of my drive. I lost a lot of files, but the most important files I was able to recover. All the data files I have put on the system drive, I was completely able to recover. So what does it do exactly? Just to keep it simple, whenever it encounters a read error on the drive, it will not stop as most programs do. DD, for example, will just stop abort. It will try continuously until it gives up and passes over to the next block. In that way, you are sure that every spot on your hard drive that can be recovered is recovered. Now, the features. It's a little C program. It's super simple to install because it will install on anything POSIX. It's just configure, make install, and it will take only about half a minute to install. So it's very easy to install. It does everything devices. So you can use it on drives, CD-ROMs, tape drives, even I think failed USB sticks. However, I don't know how a single bit or a block on a USB stick can go wrong. But anyway, you can try it on that one as well. You don't have to wait for errors. So you don't have to do anything. Do a manual intervention. It goes fully automatic. It does not truncate the output file. So if you launch DDRescue a second time or a third time, it will try to fill in the gaps. And you can also use the log file feature. So with a log, only the needed blocks are read the second time it tries to rescue the device. It works on files as well. If you can mount a system and you know which file exactly you want to rescue, you can just try to rescue that particular file. Now, it has a very, very cool feature, and it is merging of backups. Imagine that you make a CD backup of some data, and you make another CD backup of that first backup, just in case the first backup gets scratched and has read errors. And you make another CD of the first two in case you misplace the first two, for example. So you have three identical CDs just to be on a very, very safe side. Now, what can happen with CDs is that all three CDs go bad. CDs are a very poor medium to store data on, and it's very likely that after 4 years, those three CDs will have errors on them, but all in different places, not on the same place. It's completely random. With DDRescue, you can use the merging capability. That means you run DDRescue one at a time on each CD with the same output file. And that should give you a complete error-free result. I already know a lot of places where I could use DDRescue just to do that, to have it merge two backup CDs into one functional one. You can even use DDRescue to read from raw devices. For people who don't know, a raw device is what you find in Unix under the dev directory. And a lot of software uses raw devices completely because it bypasses the Unix file system. And that gives a great speed advantage. DDRescue can work on raw devices as well. You can run it in reverse mode, so you can start bottom to top, and you can interrupt the rescue at any time and resume it at a later point. So that is very cool software. The author is Antonia Diaz. Some tips. Watch what you do. It's easy to get the input file instead of the output file and really mess up your original drive. So get the syntax right. Also, don't mistake this program with DD underscore rescue. That is from Garloff, and it's not exactly the same program. Availability. It is OS independent because it's C. I've read, for example, a comment of a person who had created a Perl program to combine the forces of Spinrite. If you know Steve Gibson and the podcast Security Now, you know all about Spinrite. Spinrite is a drive recovery program. And someone combined the forces of Spinrite and DDRescue on a Windows machine. So you can compile it on anything that understands C. The latest release is 1.3, and it's from 19 December 2006. You can get it from gnu.org/software/ddrescue/ddrescue.html. Of course, links and notes on sourcetrunk.com. The license is GNU Public License. You can support it. Well, you only can support it by posting to the mailing list and give some feedback, because I haven't found anything to support the offer for this great software. You can contact him yourself and ask him what his PayPal account is, for example. Okay.
Games.
Eboard. Eboard is a chess interface for Unix-like systems based on the GTK Plus toolkit. It provides a really nice chessboard. I'm going to take it for a quick spin and describe the program a little bit more. Eboard gives you a simple chessboard in 2D, two-dimensional, and it gives you the possibility to play against a lot of chess engines, artificial intelligence engines. For example, you have the GNU Chess 4, you have the Cheng engine, you have the Crafty engine, and you can even hook up a generic engine if you want to. They have to speak the same language, of course, but so you can choose the one you want. This gives you a nice chessboard to play against the computer, but it has more. When you go to the peer menu, there you can ask it to connect to other server. Direct connection with a remote eboard. That means you can phone a friend or chat with a friend and tell him to launch eboard and host a little server, so you can just play directly against someone. Two eboards over the internet. Now, what is really cool about this, and I'm not going to elaborate a lot about eboard because it has a lot of features which are really meant for professional or not so professional, but for chess players who know what they are doing. And I'm not a chess player who knows what he's doing, so I can't describe all the nice features that are packed in this one. But I really want to, so sorry developers, I'm not able to do it, but what I really want to point out here is that you can use this chessboard for connecting to the chess servers on the internet. And one of those chess servers is, for example, freechess.org. I'm going to explain a bit about freechess.org. So if you use eboard, it's enough to tell it to connect to FICS, that's the freechess.org, and then you can just play with all the people who are connected. Most of the people will host a game and say, well, I'm playing in this manner, I will play for 5 minutes, or I'll play for 10 minutes, or I will play this kind of chess game, and you can just say, okay, good, I'll play with you, and you will play. Now, how does it work? Very easy. If you want to use freechess.org, just go to their site, where they have the nice tagline, "We do it for the game, not the money." You can register on the site completely for free. And when I registered, I immediately got the notice that they don't accept email addresses that are freely available from the web, such as Hotmail, Yahoo, and NetZero. So my sourcetrunk@gmail.com was in a bit of a problem. I had to use another mail address. Once I had a correct mail address, I had to agree that I would not receive assistance during my games. That means from a chess computer, or from a book, or from a database. And I can imagine that that is really tempting if you are playing with someone to use another computer to get your moves right. You had to agree that you would not make multiple accounts, and so on, and so on, and so on. I have to be over 13 years of age. Okay, so I was a member in less than a minute. I got a quick start guide how to do it, and I could use their Java clients just to play without any clients at all. So if you don't like to install clients, or you are at work and you want to play and you're not allowed to install clients, you just can use the Java client on freechess.org, which is really, really nice. If you want to download a client, you can. They have on their site a long list of freechess.org capable chess clients for different operating systems, for Linux, for macOS Classic, for macOS X, for mobile phones, for Palm, for Pocket PCs, for Unix, for Windows 2000, Windows XP, and so on and so on. So you can really check out the clients you want and just play with one of them. And that is how I got to find out about eBoard. Now, back to eBoard. What I did to try it out was to play three nights against lots of different people, and it was really fun. You can really invite people to play with you, or you can just hop on to games that are open for play. And it's like I described. People immediately tell you what they want, if they want to play for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour, how they play, what their level is, and so you can really play with someone that is on your level or above your level, and so on and so on. eBoard provides you a very nice client, a very nice two-dimensional client, very clear, very responsive, without hiccups to do so. So you have the main board, you can see the main board, and you can have a console as well, where you can see all the information from the server. People can chat on that server as well. And you can have the different chat consoles next to each other. You can have multiple eBoards open. So if you only want to watch two people play and don't interrupt, you can have one board open for one game and another one for another game. And so you can have, I think, up to 10 or 12 boards open where you can watch the games. You can have sounds as well to warn you if your opponent has made a move. You can highlight the last move. That is really, really important, because I was nearly falling asleep when I was playing with someone. He made a move and I didn't even know what he did. So if you can just use the highlight last move. As I said, eBoard has a lot of things you can use as a chess player. Just go check it out. Okay, let's see. Wishlist for eBoard. Well, when I first used the software, I was inclined to say that 3D should be included. But when I was playing with it more and more, I would be stepping away from 3D boards for computer chess play, because I've tried some 3D chess boards, and I must say that's still a bit confusing and not so good for gameplay to have a fake 3D look. So I'm sticking with the 2D view for computer play, and eBoard is good enough for me. The author is Felipe Bergo. Availability, well, it's available for GNU Linux, FreeBSD, all sorts of BSDs, Solaris, macOS X under the Thing project, for example. And for Windows users, well, if you like eBoard and you have a Windows machine, check out WinBoard. It has the same network functionality, and it's the XBoard Windows port, and they are a bit alike. They have some similarities. Latest release of eBoard is 0.9.5, and that dates from 2003. But based on a post from the author on the eBoard site, which is from 4th of December 2006, the author is working on a new version based on GTK 2, and he hopes to finish it in 2006. That gives him, I think, 5 more days left. Where to get it? You can get it from eBoard.sourceforge.net, and the license is GNU General Public License. How to support it? You can mail the author how you can support him, because he doesn't put anything on his site about supporting. Try it out.
A little extra.
This forbidden fruit is really, really good. Oh yeah, that reminds me. A friend of mine was a bit upset because I didn't translate the beer Mors Subit. I told everything I knew about Mors Subit, but I didn't translate what it meant. Mors Subit means sudden death. So if you went out on a lot of Mors Subits and you have a really, really bad hangover, well, that's the sudden death. Okay, let's continue to the next one. Brutal Chess. Well, when I was playing eBoard, I kept thinking about Battle Chess. Some of you may know Battle Chess. That's a game that now is, I think, 15 years old. And You can play against the computer. It's a chess game in three-dimensional. Well, three-dimensional with very big pixels. And when two figurines were against each other, they really battled. So you had a queen kicking, I think, a little pawn in the nuts or something like that. It was a really, really cool game. It gave you a really good artificial intelligence, and at the same time you could enjoy seeing the little figurines smacking each other silly. And I searched for something comparable to that, and there was nothing to be found. Well, I didn't find anything, but there was one project, Brutal Chess, which is trying to achieve that. They are early developers. It's an early development. And to my surprise, on Christmas, they released their 0.5 alpha version. Now, the thing that they are concentrating the most now is just the 3D environment and having that really nailed down before they are going to use figurines and have them battle against each other. But that is the main goal. Now, the 0.5 version is really nicely shaded. It's really nicely drawn. It's with OpenGL. And before I blabber on, I'm just going to give you the description from the site. Brutal Chess is a fully featured chess program featuring a difficult computer opponent, a fully 3D user interface, and in-development features for an adjustably difficult AI, game recording, playback, and scenario games. As I said, the only thing you will have now is a really nice 3D chessboard you can use, and you can play against a very nice artificial intelligence for a nice game of chess. Until now, you have three different difficulty levels. You have full rotation of the camera, so you can rotate a board to your liking. It has MD3, Quake 3 model support. But as I said, that's just the basics now. They're really concentrating on the engine before they will go to have a good animation system on it. But that's their main goal. Negative aspects or wishlist. Well, it's fully in development, so we really have to give the guys a break. But this is very, very promising. The offers. Well, the development crew are a handful of students from the University of Michigan. They're all engineers. Well, they're in engineering college, and they have in their study areas different disciplines of computer science. The current team is Maxwell Lazaroff, Joe Flint, Neil Pankey, and Mike Cook. The availability, well, now it's available for Windows. I tried it out on a Windows machine. It's very fast, very nice. Mac OS X and all sorts of Linux and BSDs. The latest release is 0.5 alpha, and you can get it at brutalchess.sourceforge.net. Links and notes on sourcetrunk.com. The license is GNU General Public License. You can support it by submitting simple bug reports, and you can support them via PayPal. You can click on the very subtle Give Us Money button on their site. Okay, let's wrap it up. Have yourselves a very nice New Year's Eve party. Christmas already passed. And, well, all the best for 2007. Leave your comments on sourcetrunk.com or mail me directly via sourcetrunk@gmail.com. Music is provided by the nice people of music.podshow.com. I'm leaving you with One Day in New York City by Atomica. Thanks for your time and good hunting. Calling
Show.